This is Audible.
Audible Frontiers presents The Companions, written by R.A. Salvatore, narrated by Victor Bavin. When the trials begin, in soul-torn solitude despairing, the hunter waits alone. The companions emerge from fast-bound ties of fate, uniting against a common foe. When the shadows descend, in hell-sworn covenant unswerving, the blighted brothers hunt, and the godborn appears, in Rose blessed abbey reared, arising to loose the godly spark. When the harvest time comes, in hate-fueled mission grim unbending, the shadowed reapers search. The adversary vies with fiend-wrought enemies, opposing the twisting schemes of hell. When the tempest is born, as storm-tossed waters rise uncaring, the promised hope still shines, and the reaver beholds the dawn-born chosen's gaze, transforming the darkness into light. When the battle is lost, through quake-tossed battlefields unwitting the seasoned legions march, but the sentinel flees with once proud royalty, protecting devotion's fragile heart. When the ending draws near, with ice-locked stars unmoving, the threefold threats await, and the herald proclaims, in war-wrecked misery, announcing the dying of an age. As written by Eliandreth of Orishar, circa 17,600 D.R. Prologue. The Year of the Awakened Sleepers, 1484 D.R. Kelvin's Cairn. The stars reached down to him, like so many times before in this enchanted place. He was on Brunner's Climb, though he didn't know how he had arrived there. Guinevere was beside him, leaning against him, supporting his shattered leg, but he didn't remember calling to her. Of all the places Drizzt had ever traveled, none had felt more comforting than here. Perhaps it had been the company he had so often found up here. But even without Brunner beside him, this place, this lone peak rising above the flat, dark tundra, had ever brought a spiritual sustenance to Drizzt Do'Urden. Up here, he felt small and mortal, but at the same time confident that he was part of something much larger, of something eternal. On Brunner's Climb, the stars reached down to him, or he lifted up among them, floating free of his physical restraints, his spirit rising and soaring among the celestial spheres. He could hear the sound of the great clockwork up here, could feel the celestial winds in his face, and could melt into the ether. It was a place of the deepest meditation for Drizzt, a place where he understood the great cycle of life and death. A place that seemed fitting now, as the blood continued to flow from the wound in his forehead. The Year of the First Circle, 1468 D.R., Netheril. A dusty sunset filled the western sky with stripes of pink and orange hanging above the endless plain, a reminder that this region was once, not long ago, the vast magical desert known as Anorak. The advent of shadow, then the trauma of the great spell plague, had transformed this region of toil somewhat. But the stubborn nature of Anorak's enchantment of barrenness had not allowed all that had been to be so easily washed away. There was more rain here now, perhaps, and more vegetation, and the drifting white sands had settled to a dirtier hue of earthen brown, as renewed flora grasped and held. The dusty sunset, however common, served as a warning to the newcomers to the region, particularly the Netherese of Shade Enclave, that what once was might someday be again. To the nomadic Bedin, Such sights rekindled their ancestral tales, a reminder of the life their predecessors had known before the transformation of their ancient homeland. The two Shadovar agents making their way west across the plain hardly gave the sunset a thought, though, and certainly didn't dwell on any deeper implications as to the sky's coloring, for their months of intensive investigation seemed at last to be coming to fruition, and so their eyes were firmly rooted upon the road ahead.
"Why would anyone live out here?"
asked Unteris, the larger of the pair, the brawn to Alpirs's brain, so it was said.
"Grass and wind, sandstorms, Faerim and Asabi, and other such monsters."
The muscular shade warrior shook his head and spat down from his pinto horse to the ground. Alpirs de Nutes laughed at the remark, but wasn't about to disagree. "The Bedain are ever blinded by their pride and their traditions."
"They do not understand that the world has changed," Unteris said.
"Oh, but they do, my friend," Alpirs replied. "What they do not understand is that there is nothing they can do about it. To serve Netheril is their only course, but some, like the Desai who camp before us, think that if they just remain far enough out from the civilized cities of Netheril, among the Lions and the Faerim, we will not bother too greatly with them." He gave a little laugh at his own words. "Usually they are right."
"But no more," Unteris declared.
"Not for the Desai," Alpirs agreed. "Not if what we have come to believe about the child is true." As he finished, Alpirs nodded to the south, where a lone tent shuddered against the unrelenting wind. He kicked his chestnut mare into a trot and made a straight line for it, Unteris close behind. A solitary figure clad in an ankle-length robe of white cotton emerged from the tent at the sound of their approach. The collar of the Bedain man's garment was round in design and set with a large button and tassel, signifying the Desai tribe, and like most of the Bedain in this region, the man wore a sleeveless coat, called an abba, striped in brown and red.
"Long have I waited,"
the man said as the two riders approached, his leathery, wind-blown and sun-drenched face peeking out at them from inside the frame of his white kafia headscarf.
"Pay well, you will."
"Sounds angry as usual, the Bedain dog," Unteris whispered.
But Alpirs had a remedy already in hand.
"Well enough?"
Alpirs asked the Bedain.